The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on November 23, 2003. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, it's good to see a few hearty souls here this morning. I wasn't sure how many we'd get on this snowy day, but I'm glad you all made it. Well, today, I thought I would talk about, you know, we often talk about, or we have the expression anyway, the way-seeking mind. And maybe it's time that we just look at that a little bit. What do we mean, way-seeking mind? What is this way-seeking mind? If we approach this with our ordinary understanding, our ordinary take, well, we think, well, I have a mind, and it sounds like if I'm going to seek the way, it's like I'm here and now I'm looking for something else out there. And it's a very natural understanding. That's usually how we would approach most things anyway. If we're going to seek them, we look outside, we look out there. Also, it would sort of imply that maybe right now where I am, I'm lacking something. And so I'm seeking something, as though there were something outside me that I need to find. Very, very natural understanding. The only problem is that in Buddhism, one of the most basic understandings is, though it's very profound, of course, and most of us don't really understand this, even when we hear this teaching, we're a bit perplexed by it. Maybe oftentimes we kind of explain it away to ourselves, but this very central understanding, this insight of the Buddha, is that we don't find a self. So then, of course, the question comes up, well, what is doing this seeking? Well, we would ask a question like this because we're caught in that first way I was just describing. And well, here I am, and now I must be seeking something out there. So when we talk about this way-seeking mind, we'll probably approach it with that kind of an understanding. And then when we encounter the teaching of not-self, that we don't find a self, whatever you pick up, whatever you take hold of, however you would configure it in your mind or whatever, this is not self. There's no way we can put that together, because what we would be assembling here would be something that remains what it is, itself. It doesn't change, and we don't find anything like that in our experience if we look carefully. So, how do we understand this? Nagarjuna said that without this understanding of, he's speaking of emptiness, but it's really this understanding of how it is that we don't get hold of a self here. Without this understanding, nothing is clear. With this understanding, everything is clear. But without this understanding, nothing is clear. And of course, that's where most of us are. We don't understand this matter of that we don't find a self. And as a result of that, when we look at this teaching we have of the way-seeking mind, we're confused and we don't understand what is going on there. So today I want to talk about this, maybe we can just say the true seeking mind, given this understanding that we have in Buddhism, that we don't find a self. And here we have it in a quote, in a nice discussion of this matter, and a quote from Pai Chang, great Zen master. And what he had to say about this, let me just read through this first. Pai Chang said, "Don't seek a Buddha. Don't seek a teaching. Don't seek a community. Don't seek virtue, knowledge, intellectual understanding, and so on. When feelings of defilement and purity are ended, still don't hold on to this non-seeking and consider it right. Don't dwell at the point of ending, and don't long for heavens or fear hells. When you're unhindered by bondage or freedom, this is called liberation of mind and body in all places. A Buddha is one who does not seek. In seeking this, you turn away from it. The principle is the principle of non-seeking. When you seek it, you lose it. If you cling to non-seeking, this is the same as seeking. If you cling to non-striving, this is the same as striving. So that's Pai Chang. So this is a way of looking at this, another way of looking at this teaching of not self, that we don't find a self here. We can look at it in conjunction with this matter of seeking, the seeking mind. But he says, don't seek a Buddha. Well, why not? Don't seek a Buddha, don't seek a teaching, don't seek a community. There we have Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, the three treasures. Don't seek these. Why not seek a Buddha? Well, because immediately, if we look at the mind that is approaching this matter that we have of our confusion here, looking for a Buddha, an enlightened one, somewhere out there, and of course, what are we looking for? We're looking for some particular person to show up now. But Buddha isn't something like that. Buddha isn't a particular person, and neither are you, for that matter. Well, actually, this is why you can be Buddha. And so this matter, if we're looking, if we want to look for this Buddha, we shouldn't be looking out there. Buddha is not something separate and apart from you, removed from you, this awakened person that we seek. If you want to be this person, you want to awaken, and you think, well, yeah, maybe in the future then I can awaken. I can wake up to what is going on here. Well, how can you awaken in the future? You're not in the future. You'll never be in the future. We're never in the future. So if this Buddha that you want to become is something off in the future like that, once again, we put Buddha out there somewhere. We say, well, but that'll be me when I get there. But we never get there. We never get over there. If they're standing out there somewhere, we imagine something has come together here, some person now, and we think, well, there's a Buddha. There's no particular thing that is ever formed here. And besides that, it's over there. Or if it's off in the future, it's over there. It's off in the future. So now if we understand seeking to be seeking in that way, looking in that way, we keep missing the thing to awaken to is right here. It's just this. Most of all, it is, notice what you're doing right now. Notice how your mind is split somehow, and you're not really paying attention to reality, which is right here. You're looking out there somewhere. This is very important that we start to recognize this and to catch ourselves in this moment, doing just that, leaping out of the moment, looking somewhere else out there for something. So he says, don't seek a Buddha, don't seek a teaching. Well, why not? Well, once again, this teaching of the way is really going to be found right here. You know, the Buddha likened his teaching to a raft, remember? And if we seek that raft, we seek something out there that's going to, I don't know, do it for us and carry us across. Once again, we're making this same mistake. That the teaching of the awakened is, as the Buddha said, to do what is wholesome, to avoid what is unwholesome. Purify your own mind. It is to look right here at what is taking place right now in this moment. And he said, this is the teaching of the awakened. This is what the awakened teach. Do what is wholesome, avoid what is unwholesome. Purify your own mind. 183rd verse of the Dhammapada. Well, this purify your own mind is right here with this. And this is what the Buddhas teach. So we don't need to seek for this. We don't need to, once again, to look outside. All the teaching that is there, all of the utterances of the Buddhas and the awakened and the patriarchs and whatever, all of these sayings and teachings are, just as we find here with Pai Cheng, to direct us right back to here. But we are so quick with our grasping mind, we launch ourselves out there somewhere looking. Well, of course, that's only occurring in our mind that we project in that way. Because we're always just sitting right here, whether we're paying attention or not. Also, don't seek a community, he said. Well, why not? Well, what community is this going to be? Something out there now, I need this community now to sustain me somehow. What? But you, if you look, you already are sustained. No, you realize that this community is you. All right, once again, it's right here. You must be the community. Because if you aren't, where is the community? The community isn't something for you. Already our life is expressed as community, but we can either pick that up and realize that and live it out, or we can once again wall ourselves off. Here I am, and now I need these others around to sustain me somehow. Well, sustain what? Just sustain this little ego in some way, to please it, to protect it. But that isn't the true seeking mind. That's once again looking out there, seeking in that way. So when we speak of this way-seeking mind, we need to understand this. And we're not talking about always looking out there. What else did Pai Cheng said? Yeah, and then he said, don't seek virtue. Yeah, well, virtue, do you expect virtue to somehow land on you then? You're looking for virtue. Once again, it's let virtue just spring forth right here. How do we do that? Well, we're paying attention to how we're acting, how we're speaking, how we're carrying on, how we're interacting with others. How much are we, is our concern with others really a concern for, am I getting, am I pleased with this? Now we forget all of that and just be present here in this way that we've just talked about. And already, if you notice, virtue is right there. Quietly, we're cultivating this right there. We're cultivating this by just simply returning to this, coming back to this. We don't need to find some special way to express that virtue. Virtue is just simply coming out of a wholesome state of mind where this concern for the little self is not there. Best way to take care of this little self. And he says, don't seek knowledge or intellectual understanding. And these are kind of the same. Don't seek knowledge. The reason you don't need to seek knowledge is because you already know. You know that? So you don't need to seek it. And don't think that you don't know. You do know. But usually we think knowledge has something to do with getting the right idea. Getting the right concept, the right storyline here, the right way to explain it or to describe something or whatever. Talk about know-how. Well, now we're getting a little closer, perhaps, to knowledge. You have the know-how. You're in some situation, you know how to deal with it. This is, knowledge is closer to something like that. That's true knowledge. But do you have this in terms of this knowledge of what is going on here? This is already yours. This is awakening. This knowledge, this wisdom, or this special kind of knowledge, not really special, but it's not our usual kind of knowledge, which we generally think of as just intellectual understanding. So we also talk about this don't know mind. But the don't know mind is a mind of actual knowledge. Because this knowledge is here, it isn't. We don't know. We don't know in the sense that we're looking to something else out there to be the understanding of truth. Like somehow we can get the right idea. Mm-hmm. Now we have knowledge. This isn't knowledge, though. Whatever we grasp in that way, this is a belief, this is opinion, this is conjecture, this is modeling of some kind. We form some kind of a model or image of something else out there. All of this is very useful and handy. It isn't like this bad or anything, but we mistake any of that for knowledge. Actual knowledge is right here. It is what is being experienced directly. And we know what that is. You know, you're sipping coffee, yeah? And that's knowledge right there. The intellectual part, the description, the modeling, the image, the whatever, you can describe now coffee to someone who's never tasted coffee, but that isn't knowledge. That is a conceptual grasp. Perhaps they can get some sense of one thing or another, but it's not knowledge. So knowledge is already immediate with us all the time. It's just that, and the actual knowledge of reality, truth, is immediate with us all the time. We're no different than a Buddha in that way. The only difference is that a Buddha isn't deceived, isn't confused, isn't lost in thought, isn't grasping what they think, thinking somehow that their understanding will come through that. The understanding is already with us. It is already here. So we don't need to seek it. So he says, don't seek knowledge and don't seek intellectual understanding. Because once again, intellectual understanding, well, that's just what we can grasp with the intellect. And as valuable and wonderful as that is, and it's also very helpful for us to get our intellects in working order so they're not too haywire, not too irrational. You know, we need to, you know, function fairly rationally. For no other reason than just to make this functioning kind of clear and orderly so we're not fooled by it. It's much easier than to see it for what it is. But it's not knowledge. It never yields knowledge. Knowledge is already here. So we don't need to seek it. So he says, don't seek virtue, knowledge, intellectual understanding, and so on. He said, when feelings of defilement and purity are ended, yeah, so you think about, well, I'm defiled, I'm, well, I don't quite have it yet. I'm somehow this deluded human being, and I would like to wake up, I would like to become a Buddha, etc. As we have feelings like this of defilement and feelings of purity, you know, I want to purify my mind like the Buddha instructed, you know. Yeah. Well, if we just stop doing this, well, what's the problem, you know? But we don't notice what we're doing, you see. So he says that when feelings of defilement and purity are ended, let me settle into that. But before, if we truly settle into it, no problem. But we might be thinking, yeah, well, let's bring that to an end then. But he says, still don't hold on to this non-seeking and consider it right. That somehow now we enter into this, you know, like a Buddha, you know, we just have this non-seeking mind. That's right. But you see what we've done? We've just made this non-seeking mind now into something. Oh, yeah, I want that. Yeah, of course, I don't want the seeking mind. I want the non-seeking mind. See, but you see, we're still seeking. See? Same mistake. It's just, you see how subtle this is and how easily we get trapped and fooled and deceived. See, and there's nothing to grasp here. It's just a matter of waking up to what it is and how quickly, how easily we're caught. And that's all right. You get caught, okay, let's get out of it again. Let's stop. It's a matter of ongoing. That's why we talk about awakening in each moment, again and again. We need to awaken again in each moment. Can't take it for granted that, whoa, I got that now. And, well, we're right back there again, you see. So it's just something ongoing. So still don't hold on to this non-seeking and consider it right. He said, don't dwell at the point of ending and don't long for heavens or fear hells. Don't dwell at the point of ending. Well, why not? Well, because there's no ending. If you're at the point of ending, that's been conceptualized, that's been grasped once again. Something has formed here. And don't seek heavens. Yeah. You know, this awakened state that we want for, that we're longing for, like some kind of, what, paradise or something. I want to, But once again, that is all coming out of this grasping mind, wrong approach, wrong understanding. And don't fear hells. There's nothing like that that you need to fear. Of course, in the course of a day, we might have unfortunate circumstances, you know, things occur that we don't find pleasant or whatever. What do you want? You know, is that hell? Do you think this is going to be perpetuated forever and ever, in eternity I will be cast into it? But we don't need to fear that, because the experience is continuously oscillating like this, changing. You don't need to long for the ups and fear the downs. Just know that this is what we find moment after moment. If we make it our task just simply to be here, to be present with it, we won't notice this up and down so much in terms of, oh, well, I hate this, and we're longing for something else. Because that hating this or longing for that is nothing more than, once again, the formed mind, the little ego mind here that is seeing something outside of itself and once again is chasing after. So this way-seeking mind, you know, isn't something like that, because that clearly is not the way. So when you are unhindered by bondage or freedom, unhindered by bondage or freedom, not hung up on freedom either. He said, this is called liberation of mind and body in all places. So this is what this liberation is. In other words, we just simply stop looking at it dualistically, thinking like, well, you have bondage. I don't want, you know, we don't want that, certainly. And then we talk about liberation of mind. Yeah. As if somehow this liberation of mind were something separate, removed from bondage. No, liberation of mind is occurring right here in this cycling of up and down the roller coaster ride of life, etc. Right in here we find liberation. It isn't dualistic. It isn't something, it doesn't have an opposite. And when we're thinking of freedom and then bondage, freedom and bondage. This is bondage, looks like that. Freedom and bondage. So if we want to run from bondage and toward freedom, if we're thinking of this dualistically, realize that this is not the picture. Freedom, liberation of mind, is seeing that picture for what it is. Now we don't have to get caught by either freedom or bondage. And that's what he's saying here. So this is called liberation of body and mind in all places. Then he says, a Buddha is one who does not seek. Yeah, Buddha, someone who's awake in this moment, not seeking. Well, why not? Well, of course, I think we've probably already kind of touched on this, so it's just sort of a reminder, you know. Because if we're seeking, once again, looking out there, when in fact there's nowhere else to look, there's just this right here. And a Buddha is aware, just one who's aware in this moment now of what we have right here, in this moment. Nothing to grasp, nothing holds still. But this is a Buddha, one who does not seek. So he says, a Buddha is one who does not seek, but in seeking this, then we lose it. You turn away from it, he says. In seeking this, you can say that a Buddha is awakened to, we can say to just this, or thus, whatever, however we want to put that. This is what they're awakened to. But if we're going to seek this, or if we're going to seek what it is to be a Buddha, etc., well, we turn away from it. We need to realize that a Buddha, just understand, and the Buddha is no different than you. You know, you are a Buddha, just we're not paying attention because we keep looking out there. So one who is awake in this moment, what are they doing? They're just not doing that. They're not seeking. Were you to realize that, no different than a Buddha. That's a Buddha. So he says, if you seek this, then you turn away from it. We have to understand that. You know, one of the things, like, here's our Buddha, this stone here, right? So easily we can see, if we had a humanoid figure here, it's even easier. It just kind of pulls us out there and we see the Buddha over here. Probably taken us a long time, some of us,
to realize this is a Buddha here. But maybe a little safe, just a little safer, if we don't have a humanoid figure here. Because then maybe it's easier to realize that when you face the Buddha like that, really what it is, that you're facing yourself. This is you here. You know, like when we don't do a lot of bowing here, only on a few special occasions that we do the full bow. But so maybe not all of you have seen this, but I suppose I should do it once in a while. But so easily get hooked, you know. But when we bow, you see, at one point in the bow, we raise our hands. Raise your hands like this. What is that about? You know, I've talked about this. You know, some of you know that? You raise your hands. If you see a full bow like that, and we raise the hands, because it is like you're taking the feet of Buddha in your hands. Well, who's this Buddha? Well, this is you. In other words, you're taking, you know, you're putting your own hands right under your feet there. You're taking charge of your life. You're going to take this up. You're going to do this. Do what? Well, just be present in this moment. Not seeking something else out there. So that Buddha isn't something out there that you're bowing down to, etc. If we see it in that way, then we still don't understand. This is you. This is the understanding behind the bow, ultimately. And that we accept this fully, completely take it on. That we'll take up this responsibility, being present right here, in this moment. So Buddha is one who does not seek, and seeking you turn away from it. And then he says the principle is the principle of non-seeking. So the principle, and this principle happens to be, you don't encounter this very often, never really, but just how rare it is. So rare, it never shows up, but this principle is truly what it is. Everything that's like that, and of course, actually, nothing is really like that if it's a thing. It's not like that, you know, because things, you know. But when something becomes itself, you see, what are we speaking of at this point? We're talking about reality, the truth, just as it is. Of course, everything is like this, but the moment we start pulling it apart and we see one thing or another, then suddenly everything becomes not itself. Needs everything else to be itself. Well, then it's not itself. But if we have something that truly is itself, well, what would that be? Well, that's reality is itself. Of course, it isn't an it. It isn't a thing. But we're speaking of how things are. And in this regard now, and we can talk about that in various ways. We put various titles and names to it, depending on how we're going to speak of it. We can talk of Dharma. We can talk of Buddha. We can talk of... expressed as a human being, we say Buddha. Expressed as just the reality itself, we say Dharma. Expressed in terms of a self, we say empty. And so we can speak of this in various ways. But here we're speaking of it, he just talks about this principle of non-seeking. We're talking about this true seeking mind is non-seeking. Non-seeking mind. So he says that, so the principle then is the principle of non-seeking. So it actually is non-seeking. In other words. So you just kind of sit with that and realize what that means. We're talking about actual non-seeking. So you don't need to seek it. So this really is what it is. We're talking about a non-seeking mind. A mind does not seek. So he said, this is the principle of non-seeking. When you seek it, you lose it. You wonder why. Why do I find it so difficult to be awake in this moment? Well, it's because we're seeking, we're looking. We're not in this moment, we're looking out there. To the future, somewhere else, past, some other place. This is a very subtle thing, and there's no way to even speak of it, really. We just have to realize what we're doing in this moment, and, well, just realize it, that's it. But actually realize it in all its subtlety. So he says, when you seek it, you lose it. And then finally he just says, if you cling to non-seeking, this is the same as seeking. So this non-seeking mind that we're kind of bringing out here and pointing to, this true seeking mind, which is really the way seeking mind, it is really to be understood in this, somewhat in this way, you can't really say exactly. But he said that... if you cling to this,
And observe that clinging mind that we have. It's very, very subtle. But if you cling to this non-seeking mind, he said, this is the same as seeking. It's as simple as that. So it's kind of like there's all sorts of ways to be seeking, you know. But there's just this one way of seeking that's not seeking. That's a true seeking. That's true way-seeking mind. It's not seeking. So if we cling to this non-seeking, yeah, then, well, this is just the same as the seeking. So if we're still looking for that, we want that unique kind of mind there that's not seeking, you know. But this is seeking, you understand. And as I've already, perhaps you've forgotten it, you already have this. You don't need to seek it. It's already here. So it's immediately we leave it to go looking for it. It's right here. You know, like we have that story in Zen of the fellow who goes around, lights a lamp, goes around looking for fire, you know, that sort of thing. They said if he understood what fire was, he could have cooked his meal much sooner. Yeah. Well, but that's what we do. And it's very, very, very subtle. Okay, well, so if you cling to non-seeking, this is the same as seeking. And if you cling to non-striving, this is the same as striving. Yeah, that there's no striving, straining, struggle in this business. We think that maybe we have to work so hard, and well, in a sense we do, but it's not in the way that we might think. The way we have to work hard, the hard work is just to bring ourselves back, just to come back to this. With nothing, no comment. Just come back. That's it. Period. Nothing else. You'll be gone again, and the work is still there. You got to come back. That's all we need to do. We don't need to qualify it or explain it or say this is great or you should do that or I should do that. Come up with ideas like I should sit more. Why should you? Why don't you just come back now and just do that? But we want to comment on it. We want to, seek it. We want to chase about. We don't quite get it, that it's just, you know, right here. And either we are present with it now or we're not. Very simple. And if we're not, there's nothing wrong with it. That's fine. We don't need to get down on ourselves or somebody else because they're not here. But we'll do that, you see, and we perpetuate it. And this is not hard in the way that we think, you know, like, you know, struggle and straining and striving. So we'll think that maybe somehow I have to do this arduous practice, this, you know. No, it is tough enough just to learn to bring yourself back moment after moment. If you can do that, this is in each moment we are Buddha. We express Buddha. We awaken to Buddha right there in each moment. That's tough enough. You know, we don't have to add anything else to it. You do a sesshin, maybe we think, oh, yeah, we'll do this. Boy, I did a 7-day. But that's nothing. I mean, it's just, so what? Were you able to just come back? You know, and why can't you do that now? You see, well, how do you know I wasn't doing it now? Well, because you were talking that way. It's very clear. See, but this is what we have to notice, and that is what is, you know, we might find that difficult there, you know, but it's not struggle and straining. We don't need to strive. You can do it in a moment. Just bring yourself back. So striving then becomes or this non-striving to arrive at some kind of non-striving mind is, once again, we force ourselves into some kind of striving, straining, struggle. We're fighting with it. What's to do? I mean, just right now, just, it's like in your meditation, you see, your mind wanders away, and then we say, bring it back, like somehow you have to wrestle it to come back. Well, what, in fact, if you just notice now you're gone, that's to be back. Of course, probably right away we leave again, but that's all right. There's no striving there, there's no struggle there. But the effort is just simply in returning to this, to come back to this. Come back to this in each moment. And that is called Buddha. So, that's probably all I want to say about that right now. So, have any questions or comments? strive, no struggle, no question here, no reaching out, huh? Yeah, Jay.
Sometimes when you're, I don't think I understand what you're talking about. It's just coming back, it's really the non-seeking mind coming back to the present.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're, let's say you're watching a movie, so you're just enjoying your
yeah.
That mind.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to come back.
Well, that's fine. You know, enjoy the movie. Yeah. Yeah. That's all right.
Just notice it.
Yeah.
See, I just want to that. I think there's our normal mind. We want to think our normal mind would say we need to come back. Good,
that's
what my mind is.
Yeah. Right. And then we start thinking, well, then that's not so good if I just watch a movie and, you know. But that's okay. It's more the movie in your mind that you should be concerned with there. And yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but that's all right. And even with, say, the movie in your mind, there might be an occasion where maybe it's appropriate for you that this becomes the activity of the moment to just kind of let yourself be free with the thought, you know? You know, just to follow it wherever it goes. But you can do that even deliberately. But the frame around that, though, is kind of, just barely there. In other words, like I do this with my writing at times where I'll just allow myself time to just let the mind be free it was a conscious thing to do that. That's something quite different than to be here present with one thing or another and then just sort of spacing away. Say if you're in Sushin, say, and you're eating Orioki, you know, and the mind is kind of wandering around. That's different. Because now the task at hand is to be here, be present. You know, you're feeling the bowl and you're tasting the food and all of that. Bring your mind back to that. Your mind wanders away. That's all right. We never need to scold, you know, but when you recognize it, just come back. That's all we need to do. But that's what we're doing in that moment. Now, another moment, we make a conscious decision. Okay, we're going to go to a movie. Okay, go to a movie and enjoy it. You don't need to keep... I'm not quite sure what that would mean, you know. and there's other moments where maybe you just want to play with a particular thought for a while. You know, you're working on something, and you just let it be. But then that becomes the activity of the moment, and engage in that fully. You see. So you understand what I mean? So that, you know, so it doesn't mean that you know the mind is just this buttoned down mind that just won't move, you know, it's just, you know.
The way I stated it would be impossible to live that way.
Yeah. Yeah, we can live in awakening with total fluidity and freedom. But it isn't a freedom of anything goes. It's a freedom that has a kind of structure to it. That's what we shouldn't lose sight of. We should, the structure and the discipline of mind should still be there, you know. But within that now, this mind can we can learn to let it play freely. You know, within a structure. In fact, it's much easier to find freedom within a structure than without any structure at all. You know, that's oftentimes we think freedom would be something like that, where I'm just free to do whatever I feel like. Well, there's a kind of bondage in that. Better that we put some structure there and now move freely within that structure. And that's where the mindfulness, the attention would come back in to just, you know, make sure that structure is there. But now within that, we can allow the mind to play freely. Within, you know, certain limitations there. Maybe it's time to move on to some other, you know, situation at an appropriate time. It's Orioki now, it's doing the dishes now, it's, you know, whatever the moment is. That's to engage in fully, yeah. But within any given setting, we can be free. But aware of where we are with it. Yeah.
You've kind of answered this in your last couple of comments, but it seems like it would be easy to confuse being totally in the moment and being aware of it
Yeah.
Kind of watching yourself being in the moment isn't being in the moment.
Right.
Like, you're watching the movie. If you're totally taken up with that movie, that's being in that moment.
Yeah, exactly.
If you see yourself watching the movie, then you're not in that moment anymore.
Yeah.
And the Oryoki is even a better example. When you are aware of yourself doing Oryoki, you're not doing Oryoki anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
So, to keep bringing yourself back in the sense of always watching yourself, that's never being in the moment.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, well, very good. Thanks. Yeah, that's a better answer than I gave. Thanks, David. Yes?
There are two things. I know that one teacher really tell his students to assume the position of the observer because they get stuck in that position. But you had mentioned unwholesome activities, and the way you put it was like you're making a choice there.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that really going too far?
Well, I don't know so much making a choice. I think we can choose that in a very subtle way. It does in a sense involve choice. In fact, actually the only real choice we have is a choice to either be awake or not to be awake. This is the only real true choice we have. We can choose, you know, awakening in this moment or not. But that's another whole lecture actually in there. But now I lost what I was going to really say.
You had mentioned do a wholesome activity and avoid unwholesome.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. And this is, as I said, this is the heart of the teaching of the awakened, as spoken by the Buddha anyway, and in the Dhammapada. And this matter of wholesome and unwholesome, all we're talking about is the unwholesome mind is the mind that's caught up with self. It's unwhole. Because reality is always reality as a whole. Nothing is removed from it ever, including ourselves. You know, but the conscious mind is dividing the world into this and that. And of course, the first major division that occurs is there's me and then there's everything else. And then we're caught by that. And this is called unwholesome because we're not dealing with the whole anymore. Now, the extra connotation that we might have, possibly from our culture or whatever, that unwholesome means, you know, bad or evil or these sorts of things. Yeah, well, maybe we could, you know, say that, but we don't have to load it up with ish, you know, that sort of thing. It is what it is. And what is it? Well, it's not whole. And as a result of that, there's going to be pain and suffering. Dukkha is going to be woven into that situation. And that just is what it is. The Buddha said, I teach two things. There's dukkha, pain, suffering, confusion, and I teach release from that. And this is why I say, too, this is the only real choice. It's a matter of, so we see it for what it is. Well, that is unwholesome. And the Buddha says to avoid that, to do what is wholesome, where you're not acting out of your egoistic desires, out of the self, out of a concern for this, out of a kind of a desire to control the situation so I can make it work out better for me, because it really never works anyway. So all he's pointing out here is that just to be watchful of this, to recognize this when it is occurring in the mind, and then to avoid that, to do this. And then he says, purify your own mind. Well, that's what that is. Avoiding this and doing that is purifying your own mind.
Would that arise spontaneously? Would it have to be a choice?
I think we have to be conscious of that and deliberate of that we have to... Because what occurs so easily is that the fragmented world of this and that is so enticing that we so easily get caught by one thing or another. There's our mind of desires, goes running after one thing, running away from another, and there we go. Being driven by the fact that we think that all of that stuff is so real, you see, for us. When in fact, if we look very carefully, it's empty of self. Everything that does show up is showing up with everything else. You know, the whole picture is always there. Were we to see it in that way rather than in this fractured way, the whole situation is different. But we have to make this conscious effort to recognize that, to bring ourselves back to that and to notice that. I think the simplest way, the way I've talked about, like in Buddhism, Plain and Simple, where I talk about a leaning mind, that's the thing we can be watching for. So learn to detect when your mind is leaning toward or away. Buddha speaks of this in the Kakayanagoda, where he talks about the inclination of mind. This is pain, this is sorrow, this is bondage. You know? And we can learn to recognize when that is occurring. And through recognizing, through seeing that occurring and realizing what that means, that this is the dukkha, this is the pain. It's none other than that. At that point, the mind can settle down. It can just come right back to just this, to what we would call a wholesome state of mind. To the extent that we can forget ourselves, I have this line, one of my favorite lines out of Katagiri Roshi's book, You Have to Say Something. I've talked about this in the past, but I haven't used it recently, but I think it just really sums this up. So, I mean, I think it really kind of paints the picture of the state of mind that's involved here, where he says, say you want to be an artist, you can name whatever it is, doesn't matter. But he says, two ways of going about this. You can decide, I want to be the greatest artist in the world, you know, and it's all about me and my reputation and how I can do it. Or, he said, you can forget yourself and devote your life to art. Never mind if the world recognizes you, your work, or, you know, that's for other people to determine whether or not you're the greatest artist. You forget all about that, and you just go ahead and do your work. And I'll tell you, now, one is bondage, one is sorrow, it's pain, it's obsession. The other one will be something quite joyful. It is when you forget yourself. So for all of the stuff that we want to get by holding on to ourselves, and, you know, that we want to be pleased somehow, if we look carefully, you're not going to be pleased by this. This is painful. This is difficult. It doesn't even lead to any kind of understanding. There's no satisfaction in it at all. Momentarily, you've claimed some kind of whatever it is that you're after here, and momentarily you might feel elated or whatever, but it doesn't last. And you still have this driven mind. The other situation is where you've forgotten all of that. Maybe things come, maybe they don't. Doesn't matter, because you truly, your true heart has been devoted now to your art or whatever it happens to be. And well, it's very clear. But it's a matter of us learning to recognize that. And to the extent that we're caught up in self, for all of our holding to the self to try to please it, it doesn't work. And then yet if we forget that, lo and behold, here, of course, we're not monitoring it and we're not paying any attention to it in a sense, but there it is, a joyful heart, you know, happiness, contentedness, understanding. It's all right there. This is what's being cultivated. But, of course, in each moment, we get caught, so it's a matter of learning to catch ourselves in each moment. So just look for that leaning of mind. Probably the easiest way to work with that. Anything else? What time is it? Maybe it's getting late, huh? Okay, maybe better end it here then. But thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.